Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, and thank you for joining another episode of The Book Experience. I, of course, am your host, Miss Chanel, and tonight we have a very special guest. We have Lila Ibrahim, author of Yellow Crocus, joining us this evening. You are in for a special treat. You will love her, as I'm sure I also have loved the book. I absolutely loved the book. And it deals with slavery, a wet nurse, her charge, and, you know, a lot of people had some things to say about it. You know, they didn't want to read about slavery. But it's really a relationship book. And if you are listening on the web, you can either chat with us by doing the live chat, or you can dial 31154. Press 1 if you have a question, and we are happy to take your questions. Also, if you are a little squirmish or you're not really certain about calling in and letting your voice heard on the internet or live, always text. Oh, it's a little staticky there. You can always text us at 614-669. I always forget the number. Isn't that something? I'm not even going to give the number out. You can always text us, and I will give you that number. Just a moment, since I'm going to bring tonight's guest, Lila Ibrahim, on the line with us, author of Yellow Crocus. Lila?
Hi, it's Lila.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be with you today.
I'm excited to have you. As I said, I really, really enjoyed the Yellow Crocus. It was one of my favorites this summer, this winter. Well, did I read it? I read it a couple of months ago. And then I just reread it a couple of days ago.
How did it hold up the second time?
You know, actually, I don't know if I speed read sometimes, but, you know, as I took my time and really listened and looked over words, because I listen and read myself, I think I gathered some additional information or some additional knowledge that I really didn't think about until the reread.
Uh-huh, great.
So, and I still enjoyed it, even though I knew what was happening or what was to come. I still enjoyed it.
Yeah, that's great. Yay.
So, Lila, where did you come up with the Yellow Crocus?
Like the whole story or just the image of the Yellow Crocus?
The whole story. And also I wanted to know the image too.
Yeah, the Yellow Crocus. So I thought of the story. I wasn't a writer before I wrote Yellow Crocus and never quite understood why anybody would take the time to write an entire novel. I love to read, but writing a whole book seemed kind of crazy to me. But I was talking with a group of people and we were talking about Tiger Woods. And this was in 1998, a long time ago, at, you know, the peak of his career. And someone mentioned that he identifies as Asian as much or even more than as black. And the, you know, the group of people were like, really? Oh, I can't believe that. And I'm sitting there quietly thinking to myself, well, of course he does. His mom's Asian. And we form our primary identities in relationship to our caregivers. So it makes sense that he identifies as Asian as much or more than as African American, even though our country treats him like he's just black.
Right.
So, but then a second later, in a moment, I got the image of this white baby breastfeeding at a, you know, from an enslaved woman's breast, and having, you know, been a breastfeeding mother myself, you just realize how intimate that relationship is. Just so, you're just so close to that person. And I imagine what it would be like from this little baby's point of view to have Maddie be her whole world, like to be the person you love the very most in the world. And yet as she grew older, to take her place in society, she'd be told she has to reject Maddie's very humanity. And so I just kind of wondered what that process would be like for that little being. And then I imagine what it would be like for Maddie, who would have had to leave her son behind in the quarters, or I didn't know it at the time, but as I imagine the story, would have to, you know, have a huge loss, be forced to come in, be forced to take care of this baby. But if she had, you know, caregiving genes in her, she might just come to love this baby. And then I imagine what it would be like for Ms. Ann, the biological mother, and how strange it would be to have your child in your own house not really know you. So I just imagined what it was like for these characters, really, for years and years and years. Little scenes would pop into my mind, and I just imagined it. And I really hoped the book had already been written. I would look in the library, I would look in bookstores, like, surely somebody has told this story. But I never did find anyone who had told the story. And so for my 40th birthday, I had all these friends who ran marathons when they turned 40. They're like, I'm not an athlete, but I'm going to run a marathon. And I thought, okay, starting this book will be my marathon. I don't know that I can do it at all, but I'm going to give it a try because these characters are just haunting me. And I felt called to do it. So I started writing, and it was slow work. It's a long, long process, particularly when you don't know that you can write a book. I took a lot of encouragement. But here I am almost 10 years later, and it's as successful as I could have imagined or dreamed of. So very exciting.
It is. Wow. I am so impressed for your freshman novel. It really is. It's a wonderful, wonderful story. You know, I was talking to some other readers, and, you know, I was telling them, you need to read The Yellow Crocus. You know, and when I told them what it was about, they said, I don't want to read another slave story. But to me, it really was not a slave story. It was more of a relationship story between two different worlds and how they actually came together. And they still respected their world, but they loved each other too, which was, you know, although you would think that a wet nurse and her charge, they would, especially with that type of bond, that they would come to have feelings and have ties together, but how do you cut them off as children? And so you did you wrote the story very, very well. It from a non-Black perspective.
Right. So, and really, I write it more from a caregiver's perspective because I was a child care provider for many years, so I know what it's like to love children that aren't your own. And I wrote it from my degrees are in attachment theory, so I studied human development and attachment theory, which is basically how family bonds are made. And so you can see, I mean, if you've studied attachment theory or you've been a child care provider, you're like, oh, yeah, that's what it's like. It's just in a very extreme situation. But mothers today deal with the same situation with their children loving their nannies or their child care providers. And you want them to love them, but not too much, right? So it's I'm glad I did it
justice. Right, you did. You did. I really loved the book. And everyone that I recommended the book to, they also loved the book. They thoroughly enjoyed the book. But don't you think that it is a little different when, because I was a caregiver too for about 10 years. So it's a little different when you are a caregiver because, of course, you're attached to, you know, the children that you are caring for, as opposed to when you're actually nursing, because then there's a difference.
Absolutely, yes. Yeah, I mean, in our day and age, we adopt children, right? I mean, not in our day and age. As a species, we adopt children. So we can we can become the mother of children that we didn't bear, right? That's just part of what we do as a species. And so this is a situation where Maddie became Lisbeth's mother for all intents and purposes for the first few years of her life in this very bizarre situation. And then the society, you know, if things hadn't worked out the way they had, Maddie and Lisbeth's relationship probably would have been severed earlier. Right. So in the story, like Mrs. Anne, when she asks, when Lisbeth asks Mrs. Anne about her own mom or about her Maddie, her caregiver, she's like, God, I didn't really know them. I don't have a relationship. You know, like they just mean nothing to me because I was taken away from them so young. Right. I don't have any memories of them or any connections to them. So she was alone in the world in some really core way that Lisbeth wasn't, because her relationship with Maddie managed to continue, and it managed to evolve in such a way that they could stay connected to each other in a system that didn't encourage that.
For those of you who are just joining us, we are talking to Lila Ibrahim, author of The Yellow Crocus, one of my favorite books this year, or that I read last year. And when I read it, I just absolutely, as I was reading it, I said I absolutely had to speak to you about this book. Because one of the things that I appreciated, Lila, was because, you know, I never really, I mean, I, because of course I'm African-American, I know about the slaves and, you know, the masters and the mistresses and the mulattoes and all of that. I know about that. And I knew that they had, I knew, but I didn't really know that they had the slaves nurse their children. But I never really thought about, I guess in my mind, I always thought, well, how did they keep their milk going all that time? I never really thought that they had young babies themselves that they had to leave behind.
Mm-hmm. And some people could keep nursing for a long time, but some of them couldn't. I mean, it was just after their baby was born, they were taken away from their own child, which is just, it's just so awful, I can't even bear it.
Right, and so I never really thought about that. So you did a good job at portraying how Maddie, you know, had to leave Samuel and how she expected it and how someone else had to then nurse her child. And then how when she returned, he didn't really want her milk.
And he's mad at her for leaving her all those years when it was never her choice, right?
Right.
And I intentionally wrote the story not as brutal as most people think about the slavery conditions. Like, there's a huge dread of violence throughout the novel, but it's not very violent. It's just the threat of separation is constantly there, the threat of disruption to your family. But it's very, you know, it's a very understated situation. And partly I chose that because I imagine there were a lot of plantations where and even why I wrote the story was I was trying to imagine and have some empathy for the slave owners. And to think about someone like Lisbeth who didn't ask for the privilege she was born into. She was just born into it. This was just the life she was handed. It was the life her mother was handed. It was the life her father was handed. It was the life all these people were handed. And most of them just perpetuated the system decade after decade after decade. But some didn't. And so I did kind of wonder, like, okay, why? What's the circumstances that would make someone kind of be empathetic enough that they needed, that they could break the system, even just a little bit? Because Lisbeth doesn't really go after the whole system, but she just undermines it a little bit. So just trying to put myself in all their shoes, like in Maddie's place, what that would be like, what little places of power she would have. That scene at the beginning where she considers smothering Lisbeth, I was just stunned.
Oh, yes.
When I read that. And I was like, I couldn't see that. Like, it would just be over.
Yes.
Of
and
course
you know,
that happened.
When I told you that I just reread it, that was the one that jumped out at me, because I read it the first time, and then rereading it, I thought I would have done it.
Uh-huh. Right.
Yes, just to go back to my child, I don't think that I would have had enough compassion for Elizabeth to keep her and to, you know, to remain everything to her that I could not to my own child any longer. I think I would have done it. I know I would have done it.
Yeah.
So that was one of the things that I thought about that for a couple of hours. Like, I toyed with, like, what would I have done had I been Maddie? I absolutely. If it would have meant going back to, even though, I mean, she had a little bit more freedom, but she's still enslaved. But
totally, right.
Right. So even though she's enslaved, she was still with her family. And so I would have. So what made Maddie, I don't understand why Maddie didn't do it.
You know, in that moment she thought about God and what God would judge her for having done. And just thought of the bigger picture of the whole thing and like what kind of person she wanted to be in the world. And just seeing that little baby and being like, this little baby didn't do, you know, the baby's innocence. I think she just couldn't go through with it.
I mean,
I think she probably also was a little afraid she'd be separated from her own child, you know, that she wasn't so sure she could get away with it.
Well, you know, here's why I thought she probably could get away with it, because she had a little bit of a slow start at birth.
Yeah.
So that's why I thought, oh, that would have been the perfect opportunity.
Yeah. Yeah, and that was the only chance to do it, right? It was that night or never, right? So,
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
We have our first question, Lila, so I'm going to bring 1491 on the line. 1491, please state your name and where you're calling from.
My name is Jerry, and I'm calling from Columbus. I just have a question in reference to wet nursing. If the lady that had the baby wanted the slave to wet nurse, why didn't the lady that had the baby wet nurse? Was there a difference in the milk, or, I mean, is there an advantage to that? I'm kind of confused about that whole process.
Right. So there was some thinking in upper class society that it was lowly to do that, like that was like the work of an animal, and that they were, that a lady was above that. Right.
Oh.
So that's why they had wet nurses. So in that era, it was kind of split. It was a swing back to actually being maternal and you should breastfeed. Like, it was a little bit more of the swinging back that way. But in upper class society, there was this idea that it wasn't ladylike.
Yeah, because with the studies we have now, they show that the women that breastfeed their children have a closer bond to them, and I guess they have a better relationship with the child.
They can, definitely,
Yeah, but back then, if you had slaves wet nursing your babies, then it's possible that the kids back then weren't as close to their mothers as they would have been had they breastfed their own children.
Absolutely. I mean, the whole story is about the fact that the mother hardly knows the child, right, that she had caregivers, and they just visited a little bit in the, you know, once a week when she was little.
Yeah.
And that as she gets older, she learns to, you know, sit at the table and stuff. But otherwise, she really has very little relationship with her parents.
I see. Okay, well, great. Thank you very much for clearing that up for me. Thank you.
You're so welcome. Thanks for calling in.
Yes, and the thing, too, Lila, is that slaves weren't really viewed as humans. So, of course, you would have, you know, somewhat of an animal or, you know, which is still a little, you know, a little eerie and odd to me, because you don't view the slave as a human, per se, but the slave was human enough or able to nurse and provide this nourishment and life for your child.
Right, and I think it shows that they don't even view their children as human in some way, which I find odd, right? It's like, in some ways, you're not really a person until you're older.
Right. Now, I absolutely could not stand her mother-in-law.
Yes.
I absolutely hated her. I hated her because I think that Anne, I believe that's Luke's mother's name.
Yeah.
Anne. Okay. I believe Anne possibly would have had a little more compassion and maybe would have run.
Exactly. I think there were pressures against her to not be close to her child. Well, and even like after the birth scene, right, the baby's born and Anne reaches for her baby, which is a very common instinct, and they all go, no, you can't have the baby, and take her away from her, right? And she's 19 years old. She's away from her own family. She gets pregnant on her honeymoon. Like, you know, can you imagine what it's like for her? And so, yeah, she just goes along with what her mother-in-law tells her to do. Oh, and disappoints them all by having a daughter, right?
Right. So, the first time around.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I just thought, well, you know, and then it's interesting how, and for those of you who have not yet read the story, again, it is a well-written story. We're talking about The Yellow Crocus with Lila Ibrahim. It is a very well-written story. I believe you will learn a lot about both societies, but it is more so to me a relationship between a slave and her charge and actually how that relationship evolved, but it evolved secretly. They both love one another, but they really cannot display that love.
Right.
And it's just, you know, I love it. But my favorite part was when Maddie told Elizabeth, and she said, Elizabeth, it's going to be hard, but you have to find a way to follow your own heart, even if it's not what your parents want.
Right.
And Elizabeth really, really thought about that.
Yeah.
She had to endure some things to think about.
Exactly.
You know, to actually, you know, go follow her heart. And, you know, that part was making me a little nervous. You know, I was really, really nervous about that. But I'm so glad that she followed. You know, she listened. And that showed that she had some respect for Maddie.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think she was, like, fooling herself. Like, you know, there's that scene where she's at Edward's house and it's her birthday and she's talking to Maddie in her head and you'd be so happy for me. I've made a great match. And, like, she's, like, trying to convince herself of it and convince herself that Maddie would be, you know, proud of the choice she's making. And I know 100% that if she hadn't seen Edward raping the field hand, she would have just married him and gone on with the life, right? Like, it took a lot to shake her out of her reality. And if that scene hadn't happened, she just would have married him and been just like her mother.
I'm glad. I mean, it saddened me that, you know, I didn't like him anyway. I didn't. I always felt that she was in love with, oh my gosh, why did his name slip my mind?
Matthew.
I always felt that no matter what, and that he always loved her. But, you know, she had to go with what that society wanted for her. And I'm so glad that Maddie, you know, kind of like dropped that seed in her.
Exactly.
Yeah. When she did see that going on at her birthday party, I think that was that was the major turning point. That was a catalyst for her that kept pushing her over, you know, the edge.
Right. That is the thing that tipped her over to like, oh my God, I can't perpetuate this. I can't just go along. Yeah.
Right. So how much did you have to research, Lila?
A lot. It's crazy how much you have to research. Because there's things like, you know, the weather and the kinds of food and how far things are from each other. When I first imagined the story, I actually imagined it in West Virginia. And it was going to be really close to the Ohio border, and, you know, that would be part of the tension in it. Like, there's freedom not far from here. And then when I did a little research, I learned there were no plantations in West Virginia. It doesn't have the right soil conditions. It's too hilly. And so that's part of why West Virginia is West Virginia, because when the Civil War happened, West Virginia went with the North, and Virginia went with the South. So it was all one state before that. So things like that. The one thing that I could never find, which I thought was very interesting, that the only thing I couldn't find out was the actual price of cloth in 1840. And I, like, called the New York City Public Library and had their reference people try to look it up, and I called a few other reference things that are like, we can find out anything. And they couldn't, which is a little surprising. We could find it out in, like, 1870, and I just extrapolated. So that part's not accurate. That part's made up. But other data that are in there, a lot of it's very, very accurate.
Uh-oh.
I'm grateful for the Internet. I couldn't have, I don't think I would have given up. I wouldn't have worked so hard if it wasn't for the Internet.
Would have. I believe you would have.
I may have. It just wouldn't have been as accurate. I just would have made things up, right? So...
So, again, you are listening to The Book Experience. We are speaking to Lila Ibrahim. She is the author of The Yellow Crocus. Why the yellow crocus? Why that flower?
You know what's interesting about writing is you don't know sometimes why things pop into your head. They just do. So I liked the idea that there would be some symbol of what we call intergenerational transmission of attachment. So it's like the yellow crocus symbolizes something that Maddie got from her mother that she gave to Lisbeth, and then Lisbeth gave to Samuel. And so the connection between Maddie's mother and Samuel, like you just see that lineage on down. So I wanted something to symbolize that. And in some ways I thought the necklace was going to be that. And the necklace is in there, and the necklace is sweet. But that scene, there's a scene where they're trying to take a nap on a blanket, and Lizbeth's about 6 years old or 4 years old, and she asks Maddie if what was her mom's favorite color.
Yeah.
And in that, you know, and I just in my mind, I just went yellow. I'm like, why is yellow her favorite color? But I just said yellow. And then I was like, well, where would she see yellow? And I thought she'd see yellow in a flower. And then I liked the idea of it being a flower that's not there all the time and a flower that represents spring. So, poof, there it was. Like, you know, it feels like the muse. Like, it just came to me. Yeah.
Well, it worked. The whole storyline worked. I absolutely love it. So, what have you done since the Yellow Crocus?
So what's interesting about the Yellow Crocus, I'll just give you a little brief outline of what's happened with it, and then I'll tell you about my next novel. So I sent Yellow Crocus to lots and lots of agents, and they all pretty much came back with great writing, but nobody wants to read this story. Do you have anything else? Oh. And that was in some ways the best feedback I could have gotten, because it encouraged me to keep going, because I wasn't certain of my writing at all, but I knew this was the story I needed to tell. So I had a couple agents that almost picked it up, and one of them gave me the name of an editor who might be able to improve it. And so I sent it to that editor, and he's like, oh, yes, there's so many problems, but I'll talk to you about it. So I went and I talked to him about it, and he said, you know, told me all the reasons it was problematic. I don't have one clear protagonist. It's like two main characters and all this different stuff. He said, and the ending's just weird. And so he starts to read me the ending to show me how weird it is. And then he starts crying. Like, he chokes up and his tears streaming down his face. And he looks at me and he says, that's just the ending, isn't it? That's as good as it gets. I was like, yeah, that's just the ending. That's as good as it gets for them. So in that moment, I was like, I'm just going to self-publish it. Like, it may not be perfect, but it's good enough. So that's, or, you know, so then I self-publish it in 2011. And it sells pretty well, but not great. And then it starts selling really well in 2012 because of the Kindle. And then in 2014, a publisher picks it up. And so it's, and they republished it in August. And so that's part of why it's so successful right now. So it's actually been out for a while.
Okay.
And, yeah, so I'm really, really pleased. The sales are just amazing. More than 200,000 since August. So it's very exciting.
Wow.
Yeah. Yes, and I say, I have people like you to thank, right? You know, because it's been all word of mouth. And so thank you for telling people about it, because that's what's keeping it alive and going forward and more people reading it and such. So I really appreciate it. And,
well,
and they have started out with self-publishing because no one thought it was good enough or that nobody would want to read the story. It's extra affirming to be like,
unbelievable.
Oh, no, that's not true. Yeah, yeah.
No, absolutely not. You know, one of my Facebook friends, I tweeted or I posted a status and said, now reading Yellow Crocus. And so she said, oh, I looked at this the other day. I thought about reading. Is it worth it? Absolutely. She loved
That's
it.
Great. That's great.
Yeah, so
thank you.
What in that? Yes, we did. My
band.
I really enjoyed it. And I just wanted to touch base on Jerry's question as to, he wanted to know why they did not breastfeed their children. It stated, I believe this was her mother-in-law, it says, I do not care if it is a fashion. It is unseemly for women of your stature to feed a child. Your heartbreak would only be greater should they die. I know from experience that it's best not to love your children too deeply, as it only causes pain.
Yeah.
So that was the reasoning for not breastfeeding.
Yeah.
And then,
that's right, I forgot
that
about
was another one
yeah.
of those things,
yeah.
right? That was another one of those things that I read the first time, but I didn't really pay attention until the second
mm-hmm.
time around. I didn't really hate her mother-in-law so much after that, because then this explained her whole demeanor
exactly.
and her whole attitude
exactly.
about life. Right.
Right.
So.
Right.
Yes,
I know, and in those days, people lost their children a lot.
Yes. Yes.
I mean, Mrs. Wainwright, yes. 2 out of her 3 children died before the story took place, right? So yes. she has faced the heartbreak of having lost children. Yeah.
So what have you done since the Yellow Book?
Well, so I am partway through, or most of the way through my next novel. I had told myself when I was doing Yellow Crocus that I didn't have to write another one. I could just do one and leave it at that. And I had this other story just kind of haunting me. And then I was like, okay, I'm going to start writing it. So that book I started last January, and it really is similar themes, but it doesn't sound like it at first. It's set in Dublin, California, which is a suburb of San Francisco, in 2004. It's an evangelical Christian family, and the mom sees that marriage licenses are being handed out in San Francisco to gays and lesbians. And she gets upset and wants to do something to stand up for her family values and goes and meets with her pastor, and her pastor says, go witness, lead a witness in the city. So she organizes her church youth group, and they go, and they have a very successful witness. And the next day when she's ready to go to church, her son isn't feeling well, so he stays home. The family goes to church, and when they come back, he has attempted suicide. And then she learns a couple days later that he has same-sex attraction.
Oh.
So it's a story of her struggling to kind of reconcile her faith with her love of her son and figuring out what she can do to help him and, you know, whether or not she comes to accept him being gay or not, that's the story. So you'll find that out when you read it.
Oh, well, I look forward to it. We were out at the gay venue and, you know, we saw a lot of gay and lesbian men and women, and so we came upon 2 gay men, and she said, you know, they say that you will always love your children, but I just don't know. And I said, you know, I think you would still love your son.
Yeah.
Still, you know, it's not what you expect, but I believe that you will still love your son because you birthed that child. That's your
yeah.
child. So no matter what, We as mothers always, we accept. It's, you know, at first I'm sure it's difficult, but we just accept, you know, because we know what society is like. So I look forward to reading your next novel. What's the title?
Living Right.
Oh, okay. So when do you expect that?
So I'm going to give it to my editor March 1st, and if she likes it, then she thinks it would be published by January next year, January 2016. And if she doesn't like it, then I will look for an agent, probably not for very long. Like, I'll be like, come on, you know, find me a publisher. And if that doesn't happen, then I'll just self-publish it. And probably it'll be in that same time frame then. So, yeah, and I've gotten good feedback about it. And I really, you know, my goal is to be very empathetic to Jen, to have Jen be like that friend you're talking about who just didn't expect this from her child and really, you know, has to struggle. And loves him so much that she wants to protect him. So she sends him to conversion therapy because she thinks that will cure him. So it's I hope a very, you know, again, showing it both sides of the situation. Like, that's what I did with Yellow Crocus. Like, but it's, like, from both sides of the situation, and I hope to do the same thing with Living Right.
Oh, well, I look forward to reading it. Now, which is easier, self-publishing or publishing house?
Well, what's interesting is what I liked about self-publishing is I had a lot of control, and I realized pretty quickly that if you're not like a favorite author of a publishing house, you can get lost really fast. And in traditional publishing, you basically have 3 months to have a book sell, and then it's just remaindered. What's lovely about electronic publishing is, you know, have a lot of sales 1 month and less the next month and then back up again the next month. And so it was important to me when I got a publisher that I had a publisher that really knew how to do the electronic sales. And so my current publisher is, you know, that's where the main sales are. And they're doing an excellent job of advertising and have a much deeper pockets than I do. So in that way, I'm very happy I'm working with them. And they're very responsive. Like, whenever I write to them, I hear back right away. Whereas I understand in some publishing houses, if you're not a top, already an established author, you may not get as much attention from that. So I felt really good about self-publishing. But now I really like my publisher, so I guess they're both good.
Now, this is what, because I saw last week where you were traveling because you were auctioning.
Yes. So, I had a great conversation. We'd done emails and a phone conversation, and this was an in-person conversation. Sensibility Productions is the name of the production company, and Ben Feingold is the person. And, we had a great conversation, and I'm going to sell him the option. And it's very interesting because it's shifting times in film and television, and he sounds really open and flexible as to whether it's going to be on HBO or Netflix or in movie theaters or some, you know, whatever combination. He's going to just try all sorts of different tactics to find, you know, money for the production. He thinks, it could just be a huge range in terms of production costs. So cautiously optimistic. He seems quite determined to get it made, which is lovely. So I feel like it's in good hands, and that he and his wife are like, yeah, we want this movie to be in the world in some way, or this book to be, you know, film or television. So
right. I was so excited because I just learned what option was last week from another interview. And so when I read that you were traveling and doing that, I said, oh, that is so exciting. So I'm so excited for you.
Thank you.
So
I'm very excited.
If you're listening, we could see Yellow Crocus on film somewhere.
No, I do. It'd be very exciting. Yeah.
So that is awesome. That is really awesome that someone thinks highly enough of work that others said that no one would read.
I know. That's what I find interesting. And I find it very, like, diminishing of women, to be honest. Because, I mean, there's so much about Yellow Crocus that's very intimate, and it's very much like the experience that people have had through mothering. And, you know, there's a couple childbirth scenes, and there's breastfeeding in there. And those are all things that I've never seen in a novel before. I read one novel that had a breastfeeding scene, a childbirth scene before I wrote Yellow Crocus. And I remember being so struck by that scene. And it's interesting because, of course, this is something that so many women experience, and it's an essential part of who we are, and yet we don't see it in fiction much. So, I was definitely surprised that people couldn't see the beauty in the story. But I think, you know, I was thinking about different movies that have been made recently, and, I mean, it sounds kind of silly, but the movie Frozen with Elsa and Anna, like the tension is mostly between two sisters. And Brave, it was between a daughter and a mother. And then Maleficent, it was a story really about kind of like a godmother and a godchild. But other than, you know, before that, you really didn't see a lot of stuff that the story was mostly about female characters and their relationship with each other. So I'm glad we're seeing more of that.
Yeah, because realistically, that is where a lot of the tension, a lot of women, and I'm not sure how it is in your culture, but I know in my culture, a lot of Black women don't really, you know, it's a lot of infighting. It's a lot of, you know, they don't really stick together as we should, and so.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's good. And then it is a lot of tension between Black and white women. You know,
yeah.
So there's that trust issue and just, but it all goes back to the society that we're reading about in Yellow Crocus. It all,
exactly.
You know, I will continue to say that it stems from that. So where do you think that we can move away from that and begin to mend relationships and build upon, you know, establishing healthy relationships as women?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, I think one of the really big themes in Yellow Crocus that I wanted to uphold was that someone like Lizbeth and Lizbeth's parents and their parents basically were trading social status for relationships. And money over love. And I think there is a way in which in our society that's baked into white culture, that you want to choose status and money over relationship and love. And that we don't talk about that as being baked into white culture, but I think it is. And I think it is. And that and then that striving to pass. There was a... It's funny, I should reread it, but in my mind, like, Lizbeth's family is trying to pass because they don't actually have as much money as other people around, and they're nervous about their social status, right? And so that there was that was happening in white culture as well. No matter how much you have, it's not enough, right? And I think we live with that in the United States a lot. I do also think that it sounds, as I say it out loud, it just sounds like a horrible thing to say, but I do think that Black people need to understand that the privilege that white people are born into, like part of the way the privilege functions is you're not supposed to really notice what's happening in the world. You're not supposed to really see how things work. And you're not supposed to be empathetic. Because if you are, it's just too overwhelming, right? So that was part of what I was trying to show here is the ways in which here's this world and you're born into it and you've got these blinders put on you and that the enslaved people in some ways are much clearer about what's happening in their society and the white people are like, I've got these blinders on and I need to keep these blinders up because if I take them down, my whole world will be destroyed.
But even with that way of thinking, Maddie, she still saw it.
That's what I'm saying. I'm saying all the people of color, all the Black people saw it, all the enslaved people saw it. Like they, and I think that's true in our society right now. I think, you know, African Americans understand how our society works in a way most white people don't.
Right.
And that's part of the function of how the privilege has worked, like, don't see it. So I think part of what we need to do is educate people kind of gently, and or not always gently, but, you know, as gently as we can, and that someone like me in my position needs to be doing the education. Like, it doesn't need to be you as a Black woman educating white people. You can if it's your what you want, but really it needs to be someone like me educating white people saying, look at how race functions in our society. It actually hurts you, too. And here's all the ways it hurts you, too. It's not good for anybody. It's worse for Black people, but it's not good for anybody. And let's, you know, here's little ways we can undo it by giving, you know, more freedoms to everyone, more respect to everyone, and, you know. Well, my new thing right now is the new Jim Crow. Have you read the new Jim Crow book?
No.
It's really, her name is Michelle Alexander, who wrote it, and it's just so sad and so horrifying, but, you know, we have to see how the world really works, and what she's basically laid out a case is that the war on drugs has systematically imprisoned more, you know, Black men, Black women, Hispanic men, Hispanic women, and that it's basically kind of replaced Jim Crow. In taking away people's civil rights, taking away people's, you know, right to vote, the right to, you know, get housing, the right to get financial aid, to get so many services. It's all under the framework of, well, you've been in jail. But who it affects disproportionately are poor people of color.
Right, and that's so true. I will have to read that because that is so true.
Yeah.
Right.
And so just to know that kind of the systems of oppression morph and they morph over time, and we have to be vigilant about that. And just because Barack Obama is our president doesn't mean we have uprooted all the racism that exists in our society.
Oh, no, I think since he became president, it just brought racism just to the forefront, and you really see how much... Things have changed, but they really haven't. It's really disheartening for me when I look at things really have not changed. And so, well, who would have thought that talking about the yellow crocus would bring us to race issues?
Right.
But, you know, despite what people think, life is. We live in a world of Black and white.
Yeah.
No matter what you think or, you know, try to say, you know, everything is Black or white. It's, you know, there's no middle. There's no in-between. You're either Black or you're white. You're either pro or con. And there's no middle ground. And I think that is somehow where we need to find where that middle ground is. And I'm not really sure. I'm not confident that we really can find that middle ground, or that we will find that middle ground. I don't think that we will find it in my lifetime. I'm hoping maybe in my grandchildren. But it's really scary for me just looking at the way things are going now. It's really scary. So, but thank you for going to download the new Jim Crow.
Yeah, you'll be horrified, but probably glad you read it. So,
So on a lighter note, what does Lila do for fun outside of writing?
For fun. I love to play games of all sorts, either by myself on my phone or with my friends and family. I love to do puzzles. I love to watch TV. I like to do puzzles while I watch TV. The Daily Show is one of my favorites. And then I like doing art, like visual art, painting things. Right now I live in Berkeley, and one of the weird things in Berkeley is there's lots of blockades on streets to make the neighborhood calmer. And they went in the 70s, and they're kind of annoying and they're ugly. So right now I've got a great project where I painted the blockade, and I've asked my neighbors to send me images that represent their family in some way.
And then I'm going to put it, I'm putting it on the blockade, so in gold. So I live in a really, really racially diverse neighborhood. So it's kind of fun. Hopefully I'll get a lot of good, interesting images.
I'm sure you will. Now, can you tell the audience where they can connect with you? Do you have social media? Do you have a website?
Yes, I have a website that's LilaIbrahim.com. But more often I have on Facebook, you can friend me on Facebook, just straight up Lila Ibrahim, or you can, there's a page that's Lila Ibrahim, author of Yellow Crocus. So that way I can add my other books as I write my other books. And I love to hear from people. I like calling into book clubs. If people have book clubs and they want to, you know, talk to me for 20 minutes or half an hour, I can do that. And really, really appreciate the word of mouth that's making this book live on, you know, almost years and years after I initially wrote it.
Well, I loved it. Now, do you Skype into the book club or do you just call in?
Oh, I love Skyping in if that works out. So I can Skype or call in, either one.
So how many book clubs have you done? And I'm sure that's really surprising and neat to have the author call it, Skype into their book club and discuss the book from the writer's
perspective. Right. It's definitely been dozens. I'm not sure I've counted. I don't know. But quite a few. Yeah.
So
dozens.
What is the feedback? And is it, you know, do they have an intense book club meeting, or what is the feedback that you receive?
It's quite variable. It's really interesting. Particularly in a larger book club, I've noticed if there's like 10 people or so, almost everyone tells a story in their family of having a caregiver similar, not to an enslaved woman as Maddie, but a caregiver that was either their, you know, in a parent's lifetime or their own lifetime. So I find that interesting, that this is a story that resonates for people because it is actually true in their family, that they had a caregiver that everyone loved a lot but was basically a servant. So that happens. It depends on some of the book clubs I've had. There's always a certain person that I can tell that wants a story that, I don't know, they just feel argumentative with me. And I feel like they're argumentative with me because they think that I'm saying this is the only oppression in the world, right? That slavery or issues around African-American oppression in our society is like the only issue. And they need to prove to me there's some other issues that are important too. And I'm like, of course, there are lots of oppressions in the world. This is just one story of one situation. So I always find that kind of amusing. And for the most part, I can't believe how much people like it. They feel close to the characters. The two people I find the most moving are the people who like, oh, I totally studied this. I know a lot about this history and you nailed it. Or the people who are like, I have never, ever read a book on slavery, like nothing. I had no interest. I was scared to do it, or foreign to me, or it doesn't matter to me, and wow, I had no idea. So I like both of those. Those are the ones that I find most affirming. Or the connection, maybe the two of them together is what I find affirming. Like, okay, I did it. Yay!
While I won't give the ending away, I tell you, I cried.
Yeah.
I absolutely cried. And That's all I'll say is I cried. For my listeners that have not read Yellow Crocus, again, I suggest that you do so. It is a wonderfully written book about relationships, about a culture that, you know, I didn't really think, I mean, of course, because I'm an African American, I knew about slavery, but I didn't really think about those aspects of this is what happened, or how the slave felt being uprooted and how the relationship would evolve, or whether a relationship would evolve between the care of the mistress and the wet nurse. I never thought about it at all.
Yeah.
But that, you know, you made me think about it.
Yeah, yeah. And what made most people just go along with the system, right? Most people just kept perpetuating the system. And that's true now, too, right? Most people just perpetuate the system we're born into. And so what, I mean, you asked that. What can we do to help people not perpetuate the system we're born into? And I think one of the first revealing it, so people actually see how it functions, who it hurts, who it hurts the most.
That's good right there, by the way, for you feeling it.
That's good.
Well, as we are coming to a close, I just want to say thank you for joining us and taking time out of your schedule to sit and chat with us. I never
interviewed.
Yes.
It has absolutely been my pleasure. So thank you. I really appreciate it.
Oh, no, not at all. When I schedule, I always say, oh, I'd like to interview you. But it never feels like an interview to me. It seems just like a conversation, and that we just have people listening in to eavesdropping, if you will.
Yeah, right, exactly.
What a conversation between friends.
Exactly.
I look forward to reading your next novel. I'm sure it will be just as delightful as The Yellow Crocus, because like I said, I was just talking to friends at work today and say, oh, you have to read it. You know, they were asking, what is your show about tonight? The Yellow Crocus. Oh, I'll have to read it, as I described what it was about. You just absolutely love it. You really
That's
will.
Great.
It was very
That's
good.
Great.
I really, really enjoyed it. So,
I will say one thing. I have learned that on Amazon, there's a kink in the system right now, so it says Yellow Crocus is on back order, but that's the old edition, the 2010 edition, and so you just need to dig a little more and look at the different editions, and when you find the 2014 edition, then you can, that one you can definitely order. They need to flip them so that the 2014 one comes up when you click on paperback, but right now the 2010 one comes up and that's not in print anymore.
Well, what's the differences in the edition?
Well, the 2010 one was the one I self-published, and the 2014 one is the one that's by Lake Union. And they are actually different, which is kind of interesting. When they asked me for the rights to publish it, they offered me a new edit. So they had an editor go through and make suggestions, and I re-edited it. And so it's actually 6,000 words longer than the first edition. Yeah. So that's the one on the cover of two people instead of the flower. So there's the edition with the flower on the cover, and then there's the edition with the two people on the cover, with Maddie and Lizbeth on the cover.
Okay, because I just re-downloaded it. Maybe 2 days
ago? Yeah, if you got it on your Kindle, you got the new edition. Yeah.
Well, good. Well, is there anything that you would have wanted me to ask you, Lila, that I did not ask you?
What's so funny? I just did a typing interview, and he asked me that question, and what I said for that one is, is there a milestone I haven't reached for Yellow Crocus that I want to reach? And I realized the milestone that I want to reach in Yellow Crocus is actually seeing someone out in the world reading it. That has never happened. I see people reading their Kindles on the subway, and I think, well, maybe one of them's reading Yellow Crocus. So I'm hoping I bump into someone reading it.
Oh, wouldn't that be amazing?
That would be very fun.
Right, that would be. Wow. Well, perhaps you will. Do you plan on going to any book conferences or?
At this point, I'm not, but I'm actually starting to ramp up that kind of stuff. That's not true. I have an appointment at a fundraiser for a group in Alamo in March, and I am interested in doing more kind of public speaking and going to things like that. So I'm just starting to look into all of it. So that's where I am.
Well,
ramping up myself as a professional writer. Yeah.
Well, you are a professional writer. It has been very pleasurable speaking with you.
I have enjoyed
yes,
our conversation.
Yes, me too. I really appreciate it.
Well, it's my pleasure. And I will see you on Facebook.
Yes, I know. I love seeing you on Facebook.
Would you mind giving out your social connection?
Yes. So my webpage is lailaibrahim.com. That's LailaIbrahim. .com, and then at Facebook, it's Laila Ibrahim, author of Yellow Crocus, or just Laila Ibrahim. So quite a few different ways to reach me. And if you Google me, you can always find my email. Let people just email me or message me on Facebook.
Great. Again, thank you so much. I thoroughly enjoyed speaking with you. I will see you on Facebook. And please tune in with us on Thursday. I'm not sure what the topic is going to be, but I think that I will touch base on the conversation that Lila and I have started. Since it is Black History Month, let's try to get some changes rolling and see what we can do. And so just tune in Thursday. We'll see what type of surprise we can have for you. Until then, remember, pray one for another. God blessings to you all. Good night, and thank you so much for listening. Take care.
Bye.